Hi everyone, my name is Michelle Cantro-Vasquez and I am the founder and editor of News Is My Business, an online news site about Puerto Rico's business community. Today, we'll be discussing the truths and myths of mortgage moratoriums and loan modifications and the best advice to consumers who are in negotiations with their banks after last year's hurricanes. With us today for our very first podcast is CPA Javier Hernandez Cimeca, First Vice President of First Bank's Mortgage Management Division. Thank you for being here. For the benefit of our listeners, I would like to open by asking you for a brief definition of loan mitigation, loan moratoriums, and modifications. What does it mean to enter into a moratorium process, and what should consumers expect from this mechanism?
Thank you, Michelle. It's a pleasure being here with you today. A moratorium basically is a suspension of the payments due to an alternative for borrowers that are experiencing a temporary hardship. Something happened in a moment in time, but is no longer causing them an inability to pay their mortgage. So it has to be something temporary that is not permanent, that require, like I say, major surgery, something that require a deep analysis and restructuring of the loan, which is what is called loss mitigation. So basically a moratorium is the bank is giving you permission not to pay your mortgage loan. And included in that permission, the bank would not report the arrears to the credit agencies and would not commence any foreclosure actions or legal collection actions against you because you're granting a moratorium period of 2, 3, up to 6 months, depending on which is the owner of your loan. But it's basically that. This gives you permission not to pay your mortgage, and it has to be followed by an alternative of how to cure the payments that were not done during the moratorium.
Now, let me ask you, one common belief is that consumers think that they will automatically get to keep their homes if they enter into a loan moratorium proceeding. Is that true? Is that false? And what would you tell consumers?
Well, I think the most important thing before granting the moratorium is communication with the borrowers. This cannot be and should not be by default the first alternative. If the borrower doesn't have an income or does not have any capacity to retain their home or their expenses are excessively high more than the income, so it's in a negative position, probably there are some borrowers that would not be able to retain their home. So maybe the moratorium is not an alternative. It's just kicking the can down the road, and eventually we will have to deal with this with the root cause of the problem. So maybe we have to move to a loss mitigation alternative. Well, we can restructure the mortgage loan in order to obtain a lower payment that is affordable within the financial resources the borrower have at the moment.
What are some of the mistaken perceptions that consumers have about a loan modification or loan mitigation process? For example, is it true that through a loan modification process, clients whose properties are underwater can get part of their mortgage pardoned?
Well, within a loss mitigation process, there are some alternatives that can result in that, but that's not the major cause in each one of the alternatives. For example, in a retention alternative where you're modifying the terms to retain the property, and no debt will be pardoned, it was just as an alternative. It can be separated and put as the end of the loan as a balloon payment. But that's not the first alternative that the banks would evaluate you through a loss mitigation process. First of all, it is important that the borrower has income and a capability to retain. If not, the alternative may be a disposition. So if we retain in the grounds of a retention alternative, because they have the income and they have the capacity to pay their mortgage, we can work in different alternatives. The first of all, it can be just an extension of the term. You have 15 years remaining on your mortgage, so you can retain the another 15 years and get it back to 30 years, and that would automatically lower the payment. If that lowered payment is not enough to cure the financial deficit that you have on your income and expenses, on your budget, then you can move to an interest reduction alternative. If an interest reduction alternative or an interest reduction together with an extension of term is not enough to get you the payment saving that you need to afford it based on your budget, then you can do another alternative, which is a restructure of your principal and move part of the principal at the end based on the current appraisal value of your property. That alternative can be done together with the interest reduction and with the extension of term. And with the three, you may be able to, in some instances, achieve the payment reduction that you're looking for in order for the borrower to afford their homes. If all those alternatives would not work out and provide an affordable payment option, then you have to move to this position. And in this position, you have what is called a short sale, which is that the bank will accept an offer to sell the property for less than the appraised value. And you have a deed in lieu, which is, in some instances, the bank may accept the property and as a payment of the debt instead of initiating a foreclosure process. But it's important for borrowers to understand that those are also alternative as loss mitigation provided by the banks. Not necessarily a retention alternative is the only option that is available. You have also disposition alternatives.
Now, when a customer comes into the bank looking for relief on their loans, what are some of their responsibilities? What do they have to bring to the bank to be considered?
It is important that the borrowers come with the financial documentation that they have in order to support their income and their expenses. Most of the problems that we see with borrowers out there is that they don't have a budget. They don't know what are their income, what are their expenses. And that's critically important because you need to know if the borrower can afford the mortgage payment or the modified mortgage payment that is going to be provided by the bank. Initially, the borrower should come with a hardship letter indicating what happened that caused the miss of the payments. And the financial documentation should support what is stated on the hardship letter. You need to provide if you were reduced hours in your work or your co-borrower lost employment or there's an illness in the family or death. You need to provide some kind of evidence so that the documentation match the story of what caused the hardship in order for the bank to start working in a loss mitigation alternatives. In addition to that, you need to provide all the evidence of the bills, authorization to pull out the credit report, tax returns, all kind of information to support the financial analysis. It is important to keep in mind that banking industry is a well-regulated industry in Puerto Rico and the U.S. So a reduction in interest and extension of term is like granting a credit again. It needs to be supported by financial documentation and a well-documented story. And this is subject to audits and regulators every year. So it's very important that all the story match the financial documentation and that the borrowers have in hand all their information and documents and evidence of bills that they able to provide in order to accelerate the analysis from the bank.
How important is it for banks to help customers keep their homes?
It's very important. We are not in the business of foreclosing homes and doing real estate. We're in the business of lending and earning an interest out of it. So for us, and especially for me, it's a real satisfaction, granting borrowers opportunity to remain in their homes. And for the banks, it's also a good business. You know, we granted a loan initially, and we want that loan to be completed and be paid in full. So a retention alternative is an option to accomplish that and deal with the financial or distress or circumstances that happened during the period that caused the missed payments. And after that, we made back to normal and fulfill our purpose with the loan.
What are some of the common reasons that disqualify clients from getting a loan modification?
You know, the borrower needs to have income capacity. So one of the reasons is that the borrower does not have enough income or does have any income at all. So that's one major reason why the loss mitigation process just fails. In addition to that, the hardship letter that is provided does not match, and there's no way of reconciling against the evidence supported. So as I mentioned earlier, the story does not match the income documentation or expense documentation that the borrower submitted. In addition to that, the property may have legal problems in terms of the registry, and a modification would not be able to be recorded on the registry in order for the bank to keep their primary lien on the property, which is a major milestone in order for the bank to have a security interest in the property. So that's very important. In some instances, the home may have a second mortgage, and the owner of the second mortgage does not authorize the loss mitigation. So that's one example of something that is out of our control in order to successfully complete the process. Every loss mitigation that results in a loan modification has to go to a 6-month payment performance trial. So that means that the borrower must pay 6 consecutive payments at the new payment that was provided by the bank in order to prove that they can really afford this and complete it. So if those 6 payments fail, The bank has the option to start all over again, or in some instances, that is a reason for the loss mitigation not to be completed. So basically, that's some of the examples, basically the major examples of what causes a problem and a completion of the loss mitigation process.
What's the importance of the secondary market in the mortgage business?
That's a great question, Michelle, because that also marks the difference between a mortgage agreement or a loss mitigation agreement provided to one borrower and what was provided, for example, to my neighbor. It's important to say that the secondary market is a very important piece and partner in the mortgage business. Most of the mortgage originated in Puerto Rico are backed up by a secondary market player, which may be FHA, VA, Rural, Fannie Mae, or Freddie Mac. And the result of that is less interest for the borrowers. I don't know if you remember, at one point in time, an FHA loan can be priced at 3%. And that was a result of the secondary market. In addition to that, it allows the option for the borrowers to put a lower down payment into the transaction. After the secondary market player is in the mortgage loan, he becomes the owner of that loan. And you have to obey and follow the rules that they have provided to banks in order to deal with loss mitigation situations. So for example, I can deal with an FHA loan and provide a different alternative than to my neighbor that is a Fannie Mae loan. And that's something that is a misconception out there, that why do you provide me this alternative? And I get a neighbor that they provide a significantly lower payment than I have. Why can't you provide that to me? So that is very important to differentiate that banks need to deal with each of the secondary market rules and the rules that they have in their own portfolio loans, the ones that are not sold to the secondary market, that each bank also had different rules in order to deal with the loss mitigation process. But the secondary market is a very important role, a key player in the industry. And we cannot lose from perspective that initially when the loan was granted, that was the major cause and mechanism used to provide a lower rate, a less down payment that probably if the loan was a non-conforming loan to be bank-owned. So it's important not to lose the perspective of the benefits initially provided by the second market. And now, when we are dealing with the loss mitigation process, you need to follow the rules, you know, because each one of them, depending on the risk appetite, design their own programs, which I think is basically fair. It's all the borrowers will be provided an option. It's just that it may not be the same between what you had and what your neighbor had or what your friend has. So just keep that in mind.
Now, let me ask you something. How lenient or how cooperative has the secondary market been in this situation that Puerto Rico has gone through?
They have been very open and completely cooperative in supporting us after the emergency. Unfortunately, some of them have some restrictions associated with the way they are built up and budgetary constraints in the U.S. government. A lot of these secondary market players are backed up by the U.S. government, and they are U.S. government entities. So they have their own restrictions, and we need to work around that. So they have provided alternatives and programs, some of them a little bit more faster than the other ones. But I believe all of them have factored in the situation in Puerto Rico and have become important partners for us during this process.
Is this an unprecedented situation for banks?
For banks locally, yes. I believe the same disaster that is unprecedented for the island, it was for the banks. In terms of the U.S., a lot of the mortgage industry deal with Katrina, then deal with Superstorm Sandy, then deal with the storm in Texas. So they were a little bit prepared, but maybe not with the impact that it had in Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico, you know, it has been an island, you know, it had the challenges that it had. The impact was a little bit more long-term than the U.S. The U.S. recovered a little bit faster than we did. And that caused some differentiation in the programs, and the programs needed to be extended several times because they were not similar to the alternatives and to the effects that the storm caused in the U.S. and the recovery time that it took. So it needed to be extended and needed to be a little bit reactive and not proactive, you can call it in a way.
So before we wrap it up, would you have any closing remarks or advice for borrowers?
Of course, Michelle. Thank you for the opportunity. It is important for borrowers to know that in order to apply for all these alternatives that we have discussed here, you don't need to be late on your payments. So So let's not wait until you have a problem to come and see us in the bank. You know, come as soon as you know you're going to have a situation, you're going to be laid off, your work shift is going to be reduced, you have an illness in the family. Don't start taking money from your savings and stretching your budget that much. Come forward. Come to us because you don't need to be late in your payments in order to qualify for these alternatives. Start gathering the documentation. Have your budget ready. Know your income, know your expenses, have your evidence, your financial records on hand. Come see us. We will give you an orientation. We will provide you the alternatives. And it's better early than late in this process. Don't let your credit be affected. Come see us that we provide you the most feasible alternative based on your current situation and up to the current limits that we may have on our policies and the policies of the GSEs from the secondary market. So the message out there is important to come see us as soon as you know you're going to have problems, and it's better be early than late.
Thank you for being our first podcast guest and for discussing such vital information for Puerto Rico's homeowners. We also want to thank our friend and colleague, Wilton Vargas, at Webneticos Internet Studios for the use of his facilities and his assistance for this production. If you have a topic you would like to hear us discuss in this space, please send us an email to news@newsismybusiness.com with your suggestions. Until next time.